Hey, everybody. Welcome to another show. I'm Pete. We got a lot of good stuff today. We've got a recommendation for another show off the top to take you off this show. Got some stuff about my balls, some feminism, and some reading. So get ready to enjoy that shit.
When I was there on the day they sold the cards for the queen, and when the lights all went out, we watched our lives on the screen. I hate the ending myself, but it started with an alright scene. It was the road of the crowd that gave me heartache to sing. It was a lie when they smiled and said you won't feel a thing. And as we ran from the cops, we laughed so hard it would sting. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm so
So I just listened to another podcast. I was listening to the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, and I'm going to recommend it. Here's why. So this particular episode is an interview with Gerard Way, who was the frontman of My Chemical Romance when that was a band, which it isn't right now. And I guess he made a solo album, which I'm actually just downloading right now. Paid for. Not a criminal. And this is a song from that. And he played this part of it, and, well, hang on. I just want everyone to listen.
I spent my high school career spit on each up to agree, so I can watch out my hero sell a car on TV. We got the young guillotine.
I just wanted to play that little part because, I go back and forth on it, but... Well, no, I don't. I feel one way about it and feel like I should feel another way. So, you know, I spent my high school career spit on and shoved to agree so I could watch all my heroes sell a car on TV. I remember hearing that for the first time, and then, you know, I just heard it in my kitchen now while I was standing there eating pizza. You know. And, it's so sad and true. And... I'm a guy who does not have, like, real opinions about selling out. Like, I think the idea of selling out sometimes, it's a little juvenile to think of, like, oh, this person sold out or that person sold out, right? Because then you grow up and you're like, yeah, you got to make money from, like, I want to be able to do what I like and make money. And what would I expect? I mean, should Metallica get a job at Arby's? Or should they continue doing what they like to do? And if basically some car company is like, hey, can we license your song? I mean, you already made the song. You didn't make it for us. We just want to put it in a commercial. How do you feel about that? You'd be like, well, shitty. But if you're paying me that much money, fine. And like, I think I get that. And I sort of sometimes... I could understand if someone came to me and was like, we want you to write for this, you know, we want you to write for 2.5 men. I'd be like, oh my God. But then, you know, they're like, well, we're going to pay you 3 times what you make now. And also, you know, it's way more fun of a job. I'd be pretty tempted. But I think what's hard about it is then, I don't know why it's so true with music or why it seems so obvious. Maybe because... You know, like, I saw Wes Anderson directed some commercials, and I guess part of me should have said, like, what a sellout asshole, but part of me was like, well, these feel very Wes Anderson-y, so I don't know, he kind of got to do what he wanted, although he is trying to sell me fucking beer or whatever, a car, he did sell a car. I think what's hard about it to me, or how I felt, you know, I remember hearing, like, a Stone Temple Pilots song on a truck commercial. And, you know, it was this commercial of this truck driving through this all black thing with mud on the ground and just, you know, throwing mud around. I think what's hard about it is then when you're a fan of the music, you feel like, I liked this. I believed in what you were saying more than you did, Stone Temple Pilots. Like, it's more important to me than it was to you. And so, I don't know. I feel a little reversed on my previous position of, like, it's fine because I made this song before I sold it to this thing. Because on the other hand, I feel like, well, I might be done with it, but I don't, the people who love it and experience it, you know, someone who's listening to it on their iPod every day isn't done with it the way I am, hasn't moved on from that. And I feel bad, like, asking them to. I mean, I'm talking about this like someone who's had the option to sell out, which I really haven't. I'm lucky enough to make nothing from everything I do. So that's plus. I think, though, that's that just the line of, you know, you believed in something and you'd wear a band t-shirt or something to school and everyone would make fun of you or think you're an idiot. You know what I mean? And then you were putting up this whole thing of how important that was to you, and like not fitting in didn't matter to you as much as your love for this thing. But then it feels like the person who created that thing doesn't love it as much as you, which is their prerogative. But man, is that is a heartbreaking moment. That is a tough moment in life. And it's bound to happen. I think it happens in a lot of different ways. You meet a celebrity, you hear about something somebody does who you respected, and now it's harder to respect them. All these kinds of things happen. And it really takes you down a peg, you know, it brings you down. And you're like, man, why can't this person just not be that way? You know, why did R. Kelly have to pee on that underage girl? Why can't he just pee on women who are of an appropriate age and consenting? God damn it. But he didn't. And, you know, that's where we are. So I don't know. It's just one line from a song. But on the other hand, I remember the first time I heard it, and it just made me feel like, God, the world is fucked up, isn't it? Like, it's just fucked up that we live in a world. I don't think advertisers are evil and want to just take things that I love away from me. I think they want to appeal to me, but in a way they do it by tearing things down that I love. And that is hard to face. And actually, I take that back. I do think marketing is in general evil and a force that's not for good. I think marketing only seeks to convince you that you want something that you don't want. We're getting real deep up top here, talking about these big issues, but man, do I hate marketing. It just makes me crazy. It feels like it's ruined everything that's art in the entire world. Anyway, so up top, recommendation, Bret Easton Ellis podcast. He's a weird interviewer, I think, because he's a lot more intense. Like, as he does his introductions and he's like, and he talks so fast and with an intensity that as he's doing his intro, I'm nervous for the guest who's about to be there. Because I'm like, oh my God, he seems to be in quite a froth. I hope that the guy from My Chemical Romance is okay. But he is okay. Also, secondarily, if you've never listened to My Chemical Romance, you know, and I get it. Like, it came out of this weird time of, you know, pop punk and emo and all this stuff. But I'm going to go ahead and call it one of the masterpieces of the early 2000s. It truly, like, all the way through, and it's a record. It's the last album I can remember buying that I felt like was an album. That each song was improved by the other songs around it. And I had my favorites. But man, there was not a song on there that I was like, well, this song is fucking garbage. They all had something. So if you have hesitated to listen to that band, I would recommend their album, The Black Parade. It's a true masterpiece. And their album before that, Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge, is also pretty great. It has some of the same highs. But for a first time, Black Parade, My Chemical Romance. I would listen to it. Get it? Listen to it. So my balls. Can we talk about my balls? I had an incident with my balls. So about 4 days ago, I'm at the gymnasium doing some lifting of weights, as I do. And I'm lifting a thing and I feel this sudden tug on my testicle. And kind of painful, but not super painful. And I was like, well, okay. And, you know, I took a little break, 2-3 minutes, but I felt fine. So I went ahead and continued my exercise for the day and ran on the treadmill and went home and thought nothing of it. And on Monday, I came home and also exercised that day and went for a run. And that night, my ball started to hurt pretty bad. Now, when I say pretty bad, I don't mean I was like doubled over in pain. I am not a tough guy. I don't want anyone to think that I'm just downplaying how bad my balls hurt, because I am not. I'm not down or up playing. I'm playing it as it lays, as my friend Joan Didion would say, playing my ball as it lays. But it hurt. Balls, for those of you who don't have balls, are very sensitive. And basically what I've been experiencing since Monday night / Tuesday is like someone kind of squeezing it a little harder than I would prefer, constantly. And I'll tell you this, I'm not apt to make a doctor appointment. I probably make fewer appointments than I should, because I just don't have a lot of faith in the whole thing. But I made a doctor appointment, because here was the thing. I was like, well, number one, I need to find out if this is a hernia, because if it's a hernia, I can't exercise. I can't be doing this shit, and I need to get it repaired. And so the sooner I do that, the better. You know, the sooner I can have a surgery where they cut a slit in my ball sack and shove my bowel back up where it belongs, the better. Also, when it's your balls that hurt, it's very motivating to get into the doctor when your balls hurt. I'll say that for sure. And as I am not like a guy who I'm like, oh my God, my balls, my precious balls. Honestly, there's a part of me, I said out loud the other day, not even related to this topic, I kind of hope that my sperm doesn't work. Because that, for me, solves the problem of, is Peter having kids? Well, I guess not. You know, if it just doesn't happen and it doesn't happen, I'm fine with that at this point. So, anyway, I'm not like real into my balls. I'm not like excited about my penis and balls. I'm not worried about, you know, if they were like, oh my God, well, this ball is no. If, let's say they had to remove my ball and they're like, do you want a fake ball put in there? My first question would be like, well, how much does that cost? And if I felt like the price, you know, if they're like $500, I'd be like, go fuck yourself. I'll have one. Because who cares? Who's going to look at my balls and be like, oh my God, you have one ball? You know, that makes a already horrible looking part of your body look much worse. It's already terrible. I mean, the ball sack is not a good looking thing. It's like the worst part of an ostrich or something. It's like an ostrich's head, or the hat an ostrich would have, or that thing that hangs down from like a chicken or rooster or whatever, that thing on top of its head. It's one of these flaps of skin, and it's all wrinkly, and I feel like ball sacks are, you know, they say like, oh yeah, these are the first parts to form in the womb, but I feel like then at some point some ball sack fairy comes on and attaches a old man's ball sack to every baby. And then, you know, because my ball sack seems like it's twice my age. I shudder to think what my ball sack is going to look like when I'm 100. Interesting side note, I had a friend in school. So when I was in elementary school to middle school, that's when all the kids made the switch from briefs to boxers. I don't really know how we knew, but you know, you'd go to the swimming pool or something like that and be like, oh man, I wish I had my boxer shorts, because now everyone's going to see my underpants. Also, I don't know why men's briefs have been white for so long. That's crazy. Like, when I grew up and became an adult man, and, you know, I was like, well, maybe briefs are right for me. They're not. But when I tried it, I said, hey, these come in black. How come I haven't been getting these in black all along? Because let me tell you something. White underwear is gross and a bad idea. I'm not saying like, oh, because I'm always shitting my pants. But white, any kind of clothes becomes kind of dingy and dirty after a while. And the last thing that you want is off-white, billowy, elastic, blue-out, tighty-whities. Nothing looks worse than that. So everyone's getting these boxer shorts. And my friend, Adam, his stepmom refused to let him get boxer shorts or refused to get them for him because she said, well, when you're an old man, your stuff will be hanging down to your knees. I don't know whether that's a fact or not, but also I remember at the time being like, what the hell does she know? You know what I mean? Because I'm like, well, she doesn't have any balls. But also kind of feeling like balls already look terrible. I don't think I really care how low my balls are. I don't know. I'll just wrap them up and stuff them in whatever. But I've gotten away from the boxer short. I don't feel like it's an adult choice. And I don't like any kind of underpant where there's a seam in my ass. I think that's a mistake. And that's how boxer shorts are sewn. There's like a seam that goes right up your ass. And there's just too much. It's like wearing pajamas under your pants. It's like bunched up. No. Okay. So I feel this tug. I go to the doctor. So I call the doctor's office. And I tell them my name and my birthday. Because she's like, who's your doctor? And I'm like, I don't know. I've been one time and it was 2 years ago. And she's like, okay, well, what's your birthday? And I tell her, and she's like, I don't have anyone here under that. Let's try again. And I told her. And then she's like, well, what's your name? And I told her, and she said, oh, are you sure it's not September? So let me just reiterate here. This lady was asking me whether or not I was sure that my birthday is in November as opposed to this September. Are you sure about the month of your birth as an adult man who's calling to make his own doctor's appointment? Are you sure? Are you sure that that's what it is? Because in our computer, it says 9, which I then remembered because when I got my last prescription, it said the wrong date for my birth. And I was like, fuck, I hope the pharmacy doesn't check this, which I guess they didn't because, you know, and good thing they go to some kind of special school. That obviously helped them out a lot. So anyway, I was like, and let's keep something in mind. Things that might not normally irritate me this week have become very, I've had to try and become very zen about things for more than one reason. For one thing, it's like my balls are constantly being squeezed. So something that might just be a normal hiccup that wouldn't bother me is infuriating because I'm like, I'm trying to make an appointment so that my balls stop hurting. And you are asking me if I'm sure about my birth date. Who gives a fuck if my birth date is 2 months off? And also, yeah, I know when my birthday is, okay? If I was in too much ball pain to know when my birthday was, I would drive myself to the hospital or call an ambulance. So anyway, after she asks if I'm sure, then she's like, all right, and what do you need to see the doctor for? Which I was a little bit like, well, why do you, I don't know why the people making the appointments care or need to know. Because every time I've gone to the doctor, it's not like they're prepared. It's not like they have like this stuff sitting out that they're like, I prepared this for my appointment today because I knew this guy was coming in and his balls hurt. Normally, I don't bring a glove from home, but this day I brought one rubber glove. So I had to tell her, well, I was lifting weights the other day and I felt a tug in my testicle and now it aches pretty badly. So I wanted to come get checked out. And so she's like, okay. And then she's like doing all the stuff. And then she kind of makes the appointment. And then she's like, okay, so this day, does that work? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, and your normal doctor's not here. So you're going to have to see this other doctor. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And then she's like, and just to make sure, so you're coming in because you think you might have a hernia. And I was like, no, that's not what I was like, this thing happened and I want to find out if it's a hernia. I have no idea. That's why I'm seeing the doctor. So I go in, I see the doctor. I'm in the waiting room. They have this TV going and it's got slides on it of like, you know, one says like, we recommend that women get a mammogram at least every 2 years. Which I was just thinking, like, I mean, I don't know. How? I don't know. I guess I don't get my balls felt every 2 years, but whatever. It's weird to me. It's so unfortunate that breasts are, like, you know, such a hotbed of cancer. Like, the Lord giveth and taketh away, don't he? What an asshole. Then they had another slide come up that was the men's version, and they recommend you get a prostate exam every so often. And the graphic on there is a clip art of a long, like a telescope, like a pirate would have, you know, that extends out like, and then they're looking way to shore. I mean, and this thing would be like 3 feet long, which I was like, I see what you're saying. Like, you want people to look in someone's ass, but I don't think putting a 3 foot long probe-like object on there is going to inspire a lot of confidence in that. I did wonder when I went in there, like, I wonder if they're going to have to, like, check my prostate, you know what I mean? Because this seems all sort of in the vague related area. And then I was sort of trying that day, I was like, maybe I should try not to take a shit until after I go. But then I had to take a shit, and I was like, well, I'll just have to clean my asshole as good as possible because, you know, I had to shit. It was an hour before my appointment. I was like, I have to shit now. And then I was like, well, what if she puts a finger in my ass now, the doctor? Are we going to, what if I just explode with shit? You know, and then I'm picturing her putting her finger in my ass and I don't explode with shit, but it comes out brown. And I don't know how clean the inside of an asshole is. I really don't. I have no idea. I feel like there's some shit in there, though. I was fine having a dirty asshole-ish. I just didn't want to be, like, a notably dirty asshole. It's fine to... I'm assuming that it's normal to have some brown when you pull your finger out of someone's ass. And I just didn't want to be the brownest. I wanted to be... In most medical things, I don't want to be exceptional. I don't need to be exceptionally great or terrible. So then I get called in, and the nurse, you know, takes my temperature, weighs me, and has me sitting in the room, and asks me what's going on, and I tell her, and she kind of almost laughed. And she's putting this blood pressure cuff on me, so I have a sweater on with a t-shirt underneath, and she's putting it on over my sweater. I was like, do you want me to take off this sweater? And she's like, I mean, you probably don't have to. We could just see. And I'm thinking in my head, like, I'm going to have to take my pants off. If I need to take off a sweater and go down to a t-shirt, that's a baby step in the direction that we're headed, you know, regardless of how I feel about all this. But she does all that, and, you know, then the doctor shows up, asks me about 1,000 young questions. So it was a young female doctor, of course. This is the only time I've ever had a young female doctor when I was like, my balls hurt. I'm sorry. Oh, also, here's what's fun. When you're telling the lady on the phone how, oh, I was doing this and my testicle hurt, and I'm thinking, like, this is the first time I've used the word testicle in like 8 years. I call them my balls. But then I'm like, I don't know, can you call the doctor and just be like, yeah, one of my balls hurts. I'm sure they know what you mean. And really, what stake do I have in it? And I wonder, you know, they're probably typing into a little thing like, here's the summary of why you called. Do they just type balls? Do they put quotation mark balls, end quotation mark? Or do they just put testicles for me? Who knows? And I felt like the lady on the phone could tell I didn't usually use the word testicles. She gave no indication to that effect, but I felt like she knew, probably just because I felt like such a fraud. So I go in for my testicles. So, of course, young lady doctor. I'm like, awesome. Awesome. But I don't know. I wasn't worried about it. It's not like I think I've gave up a long time ago on what people think of my genitals, like strangers. I mean, it matters to me what a significant other thinks of my genitals. I'm not saying I'd like to take a picture of my genitals and put it on the internet, but I'm fine with it. I'm comfortable. and also don't care, and came to terms way before as I made the appointment. I was like, this person's gonna have to get real friendly with my genitals. So, you know, we talk about it, and she's like, have you had any of these things, these other symptoms? I'm like, no, not really. So she's like, so here's what I'm gonna have to do is, you know, you've probably had an sports physical where you turn your head and cough, and they feel for something. So we're gonna do one of those. And she's like, so I'm gonna have a chaperone come in the room, just because it's a sensitive thing. She's like, it's normal. That's what would happen, like if a man was doing a pelvic exam on a female. Which I was like, that seems like a terrible idea. I mean, what? Why? It just seems foolish to me to be a man doing pelvic exams. Not, I don't know. I'm sure a man can do it. I'm sure a man could be great at it. But on the other hand, there are plenty of areas of medicine that are not looking at basically the one piece of equipment that a man does not own. And I feel like every man gynecologist, if you could spend one day in a woman's body, it would be like, oh, that's what that's like. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure you kind of know, but I don't know how much you know. And it can't be comforting. Because again, like, I'm a man of 30. I don't know. It's not a big deal. But if I was a 17-year-old and this was my doctor, and I'd be like, well, this is the first... This is basically, you know, I'm getting to second base for the first time. And it's a terrible context. But on the other hand, second base is second base. Whether you hit the ball or it just smacked you in the face and you got walked. But you know, I'm older, so it's not a big deal, but I don't know. I can't imagine as, like, let's say a 17-year-old sexually active girl, I'd be real pumped to go into the gynecologist office and it's a dude. I don't know. So she's like, I'm going to call in a chaperone just, you know, so there's no impropriety. And I was like, fine. You know, she's telling me all this stuff and she was kind of over explaining the need for the chaperone. And I was like, I get it. You're feeling my balls. You don't want me to be like, I don't know. She seemed to kind of linger around the shaft. Or what? Which, by the way, I mean, I just wish I had some kind of way to indicate to people, like, hey, I'm cool. Like, don't worry. I'm fine. I understand that I know what I signed up for. I know that you have to feel my balls. I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry that you have to do this. I'm sorry this is part of your job. I wish I was a loyal customer who was coming in because, you know, my finger felt funny and we could just look at that and kind of laugh about it. But it's my balls. So this time it's my balls. And my balls are the thing I can't fix myself. I've said balls 100 times on this show. So she was over explaining it, and I just wanted to be like, listen, what's the worst thing that could happen? If you started giving me a hand job, I would be like, ma'am, please stop giving me a hand job. I'm going to leave and find another doctor. So that's where we're at, and that's not going to happen. So we're fine. So she calls in the chaperone, which is the nurse, and the doctor kind of orchestrates where everyone's going to need to stand. She's like, nurse, I'm going to have you stand over here. I'm going to sit in this stool. And then she had me stand. She was facing towards my side. So I'm facing towards the wall, and then she's directly to my left. Which I was like, yeah, that's better. I don't, you know, it would be weird if she was sitting directly in front of me, just staring at my junk at head, you know, her head's at my penis height. That's weird, right? So I was like, this is a good arrangement. Except then she's like, all right, turn your head and cough. So I turn my head and I'm looking the nurse dead in the eyes. And, you know, I don't know what she was doing. I don't know if she was like looking or not looking or what her role is. You know what I mean? It's like just to be there. I'm sure they've had like a meeting and a training, and I don't know if they say like, you need to watch his balls to make sure I'm not like giving him a little tickle, or if it's just like, just be in the room, because then you can say like, well, she put her hand in his genital area and it was there for all of 1 second, so I don't think anything happened. Anyway, so I turn my head to cough and I'm looking dead in the eyes at this nurse and I'm like, oh God, that's worse. So I turn the other way and cough. And so she feels a couple times and she's like, I don't feel anything. And she's like, show me where it hurts. So I was like, kind of up back on top, and she's like, all right, do it one more time. And I did, and she's like, okay, well, I might have felt a little something on that last one. I'm not sure. So we're going to have to schedule you for an ultrasound. Is that okay? And I was like, yeah, fine. I don't know. I don't... Not a doctor. I would give anything to have a doctor in my life who is good enough friends to do all this shit for free, but not such good friends that they can't feel my balls. What I wouldn't give. But, you know, I'm like, fine. So next Thursday, I'll be getting a ultrasound. So I'll let you know if it's a boy. I was thinking today about whoever's doing the ultrasound, whoever runs that machine, they must do like 100 of, you know, like looking at babies and stuff. And then every once in a while, just some idiot like me comes in sweatpants and is like, you're going to put that on my balls, huh? And also, just interesting to note that probably, you know, I assume they don't have one dedicated balls machine. So I guess this machine will be on my balls and then on some lady's stomach. And I know they wash it off or something, but still, I would think for most strangers, if they're like, hey, would you prefer something that's been on this man's balls? They would take a look at me and say, no. No offense to your balls, sir. And I'd say, none taken. I wouldn't want something that's been on my balls. If someone's like, here's a pen, or you can have the same pen that hasn't been on your balls, I would probably go ahead and take the ones that hadn't been on my balls. So this is the tale of my balls. And hopefully the next show we record, you know, I'll have further information. Whether, you know, it's okay, here are the top possibilities. As you know, the internet is wonderful in that it allows us to research our own medical emergencies. Hernia, linguinal hernia, which is there's a canal where your testicles drop into your ball sack, and about 27% of men experience a hernia in their life. So that's pretty likely. Epididymitis, which is basically urine gets forced back into your epididymis and then it causes a horrible feeling. And a third outside option is testicular torsion, where your ball gets twisted. I'm not sure how that would happen or if that can really just happen without hitting something, but who the hell knows? Hopefully this ultrasound will tell me what's going on with my ultra balls. Good one, right? So, we have a next thing that we're going to talk about. I'm out of beer, and I'm self-medicating myself. It's probably unnecessary, right? I'm self-medicating myself. But I am. So, I need to have like a couple beers before I go to bed. And, so let me get another beer. I'm going to be right back, and we're going to talk about the Helpful Snowman Reading Challenge for 2015. Cheers to the health of self-medication, huh? So I had some friends who invited me to a reading challenge that's put on by a podcast called Book Riot. These are readery people, and their book challenge is really focused on trying to get you to read some different types of things. You know, like read a book by someone who's indigenous. You know, so like a Native American or Aborigine person or whatever. By the way, I'm learning that the term Eskimo is not allowed. Is it Inuit now? Inuit? Is that the good term? And isn't Inuit a Native American? Like, is that the same? I assume you could apply for a Native American scholarship, but I mean, is that, I don't know. I feel like it's different, But then I also just feel like it's different because they had different coats. I judge how people fit in a group mostly based on fashion. So here's what I thought, though, because I was looking through their list. And it's good, you know, it's like stuff like read someone by a different gender than you, read a book of short stories. But, I mean, I find that in the course, you know, read a graphic novel. I find in the course of the year, I generally do most of the things on their list. And, you know, some of them were tougher, but at the same time, it's just because... So, for example, one was like, read a book by someone who's over 65 when they wrote the book. And I think I end up doing that in general, just because that's... My reading is wide enough or broad enough or just quantity enough. Enough of enough. Much like the Jennifer Lopez film, Enough... I get enough reading in that I don't, it's difficult for me to read that much of just white men anyway, or, you know, to not get in a short story or to not end up reading a book that takes place in Asia, which is, you know, like one of their things. So for the most part, I think a lot of that stuff happens for me naturally. And I thought like, well, this isn't really a book challenge for me so much as like a, see what I read. And then, yeah, I'm sure there'll be a couple. The other problem I had is there were a couple things that, so one was read by, I think there was a transgender, no, it was read by a different gender, but the other people I was with were like taking it a step further and going transgender author, which is fine. I've read a couple books by transgender authors and, well, I've read two. One was a memoir and one was a book that was not a memoir. And the non-memoir was pretty good, and the memoir was okay, but not great as a book. And sometimes I think, like, it's great to read that perspective, it's interesting to find out, but those books aren't always the best. I don't always super enjoy a book that's about something... let me put it this way. Just because someone has had a very interesting experience or an experience that's outside of my experience... doesn't mean that they're going to do a good job writing about it or that they're going to write about it in a way that I'm going to enjoy. I'm very picky in some ways. Like, I think that stylistically, I'm super picky. I don't really like books that sound like books. I like books that sound like talking, I mean, is the big thing for me. I like a book where you can read it out loud and it kind of works. And so it's difficult for me to read sometimes because of that. And it's especially difficult for me to read sort of memoirs because I find a lot of memoirs, a lot of times a memoir is either a fairly mundane story that's told beautifully and that's why it's popular or told really well. You know, I would say like a David Sedaris is a great example of that. I would say a lot of his experiences aren't outside the norm and a lot of the joy of reading a David Sedaris book is... recognizing yourself or things that are familiar, but also he's very good at telling the stories and there are funny things along the way. So he's like a guy who's good at telling that kind of story. Now, other memoirs are someone who's had a very interesting experience, but their story is not great. I would give an example of, I tried to read Jenna Jameson's memoir. I'm like, well, a porn star's memoir? I'm going to learn something from this. I'll tell you that right now. Couldn't even get through it. Couldn't even get through the first part because it just wasn't, it was too boring. Like there was nothing exciting about it. And the way it was written was very like this happened, then that happened and so on. So anyway, I think it's tougher. And the other thing is I think, it's more difficult to find those books, but that's kind of the part I liked. And so here's what I did, is I made my own list of 25, and I'm going to put this on the website the day after this podcast goes up, so Friday/Saturday, for anyone else who'd like to join. But not only did I want to have people read broadly, but also sometimes a challenge point might require you to read more than one book. or sometimes it's about how we consume or find literature. Let's just go through it. So number one, a novel that's actually funny. This has been a quest that I came up with for myself this year that I would love to see people join me on. Now, it's got to be a new novel. But I mean, in my life, novels, I think maybe I've read two funny novels. Now, short stories do not count. Little humor pieces collected do not count. And nonfiction does not count. I want a novel that is funny. And when I say funny, now I looked this up online. I was like, what are some funny novels? And here's what you'll get a lot. You'll get shit like, I swear to Christ, I was looking through and someone was like, oh, James Joyce's Dubliners is really funny. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like, it's not funny. Or dark humor is like a big, Kafka is really funny because the way he looks at the world. And I'm like, I see what you're saying. But I don't know. I'm trying to think of a movie equivalent. You know what I mean? Where you're like, well, that movie's funny, but I wouldn't say it's like hilarious. It's not, it's like Coen Brothers funny. It's like No Country for Old Men has funny parts or things that are funny about it. Cause you're like, what the fuck is going on with Javier Bardem's hair? But it's not, I'm not laughing. It's not, it's not the Anchorman of the world. You know what I mean? So what is the Anchorman of books? What is actually funny, intended to be funny and is funny and hits home? That's what I want to know. That's the book I want to read. The two that I've read before that I think were actually funny, I thought Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was actually funny when I read it, but it's been a long time. And I thought that Apathy and Other Small Victories by Paul Neelan kind of falls apart, but was pretty funny. And so I don't know. Someone has recommended to me the Jesus one by Christopher Moore, and I'll probably give that a try. That seems like a possibility. Which brings us right into number two, which is read a religious text. I'm going to probably shoot for the Bible, but for other people, I would recommend the Tao, I guess. The T-A-O, the Tao. That's short and also easy to digest and whatever and understand. I guess I just feel like there are a lot of religious texts and I've read none of them. I think the Tao is the only one I've read. And it's not like the most fun thing to read, but I think making it part of this challenge. I kind of have meant to read the Bible and haven't. And so I feel like it's time. Next, a single issue comic book. So what that means is not a trade paperback, not a graphic novel, something that's like magazine style printed that you get at the comic store. It can be old. It doesn't matter if it's old or new, but a single issue, like 22 page comic book. The reason being, I think it's interesting to see how these things are still being published and what the value of that is and to have that discussion. You know, I think comics have moved into the mainstream. That's for damn sure. But I don't think comic books have moved into the mainstream. I think trade paperbacks and graphic novels, but the actual comic book and the experience of reading a comic book is interesting because there's ads in there, different kind of shit. There's usually, you know, there'll be like a letters column or whatever. So reading it in that format and seeing what that's like is a great sort of reader task, in my humble opinion. Next reading challenge is to cover to cover a magazine. I don't really read a lot of magazines. And when I have read magazines, I don't really read them cover to cover. I don't read everything in the magazine. You know, usually I flip through once and then get caught on something and then I'll flip through again. And if I read two or three full things in there, that's a miracle. So I'd like to cover to cover just one magazine just to see what's going on. Who cares what magazine it is, but just read all the words in the magazine. Next. Oh, let's see. We skipped something here. Oh, okay. So number three was to read a, to basically play a text-based adventure game, or a game that's like kind of a motion comic, or something basically a game where the gameplay is super secondary to the story, where it's all about, it's kind of a visual novel or an interactive novel more than it is a game. Depression Quest is one that I've played that's, I think, more like a novel than a game, something like that. It's a really different way, though, to experience that kind of thing. Number six, something that's not in print. This is going to be a book that's not in print anymore, or a book that, you know, has never actually been officially in print or something like that. You know, I had an interesting experience once where I had to, there's this author I like, Patrick DeWitt, and he's written The Sisters, Brothers, and Ablutions, which is amazing. And he wrote like this weird book that's really more like a pamphlet. I mean, it's a staple binding. It's really small. And I wanted to get a copy, and I had to track it down. You know, I called this store in Los Angeles that had it, and then I called another store that had it, and they didn't have it anymore, but they put me in touch with his brother, who apparently had a bunch like in his shed, and sent me one. So it was pretty cool, you know, we worked it out, and it was an interesting experience to find something, to kind of like Sherlock Holmes that shit and be on the hunt. Number seven is a childhood miss out. So for me, I would put Phantom Tollbooth up there, or probably The Little Prince. Like, these are the kind of books that people, or The Giver, maybe. Basically a book you would read in fifth grade or younger that you didn't, and everyone talks about or references it, and you never did. Next, we have a sports book. So this is, you know, and all of these, by the way, are can be broadly interpreted. I mean, I'm not creating this to make people make a list and stick to it, and it's horrible. It's just to make you think a little more about what you're reading and to push the boundaries. And sports books can be a lot of different things. It could be a book by an athlete. It could be a novel by an athlete. I don't know. I wonder if there's ever been a good novel written by an athlete. I was a little interested in, there was a pro wrestler, Mick Foley, who wrote a novel that's actually supposed to be pretty funny. So maybe I could check off two in one. Nine, read a book entirely outdoors. I've read outside many a time in my life, like while camping or doing other shit. And it's different. It's a weird experience. I feel like the times I've read outdoors have made me realize how, like, inhospitable the world is, and how glad I am that humans have evolved into having homes and shit, because I don't think I could take it. Number 10 is to read a book, like, in transit or while traveling. You don't have to read the entirety of it, because, you know, I don't know how long your trip is or whatever, but I always remember these books that I read while I was like coming back from somewhere or on a plane or something. And it's a good experience to have. It changes the way you read something. So, you know, this could even be something you've read before, because I think it's such a different way to do it. Also, it encourages people. I mean, if you're looking at your life and you're like, I haven't gone anywhere in like 2 years, I mean, you should do that shit. I was reading this thing about this businessman, and he's like, basically quarterly I go away for like 4 days or to a week, and I give my wife my phone, and, you know, that's gone. And we just go somewhere, and then I just turn off of work and then come back, and I think I'd like to do that. I obviously, I can't go to fucking Aruba, Bahamas, come on Pretty Mama, but I could go to Manitou or some shit. Number 11, this one's more complicated, but it's read a book by a writer who typically writes in a different format. So this came about because I found out the screenwriter for Beetlejuice is dead, and it turns out he died of AIDS like in the 90s, I think. And then I was like, how many of the writers that I like have AIDS? This is insane. But he's dead, but I found out he also wrote some novels. He also wrote, get this, novelization of the movie Clue. Which, if you've seen the movie Clue, that movie's fucking crazy. And to write a novel based on that movie, the very idea of that is super crazy. Next. Oh, so it doesn't have to be a screenwriter. It could be someone like, if they usually write comic books and they write books, or, you know, if they typically write... You could even go and say, like, this person typically writes nonfiction essays, but they wrote a novel. You know what I mean? Get crazy. Okay, a book of nonfiction that is not memoir, biography, or autobiography. So basically something that's about a thing instead of a person, or an event instead of a person. Number 13, a novel that is less than 100 pages. A novella, if you will. And then, of course, to counter that, number 14, a long-ass book. I was trying to think of what qualifies as a long-ass book, because I'm like, I don't know, I feel like 400 to 500 pages seems like a long-ass book. But then I figured that's different for everybody. But this year, tackle a long-ass book, whatever that is for you. Maybe it's not even a super long page count book, but it's like a dense one that you're just like, oh, God. It's going to take me forever to read Wuthering Heights, right? So, it could be time, it could be length, whatever you find a long-ass book. Number 15 is a weird book. Generally, I've found that when I dip a toe in the weird water, when it comes to books, I'm rewarded in some way. Because either the book is crazy, and I enjoy that, or it's crazy and it's horrible, and I get to write a fun review for it. And also, it's just fun. I enjoy that, like, I have a book on my shelf that's called The Faggiest Vampire, you know, and it looks like a kid's book. I think that's a fun thing to have in my home. 16, an indie press. A book that's made by an independent press, and also it has to be directly purchased from that press, from their outlet, not from Amazon, not from a bookstore. Purchase direct from an indie press. Number 17, a superhero comic. Again, you know, I think comics are getting more popular and becoming more mainstream. But I also think that there's this sort of comics canon that's developing. And the comics canon doesn't include as many superhero comics. The composition of comics is probably heavier on superhero, and certainly historically was heavier on superhero, but the comics canon is like Mouse, Persepolis, Fun Home, skews towards the memoir. So try out a superhero comic. 18, a pop business book. This is like your Seth Godin books, or if you wanted to call like a Malcolm Gladwell type book or something. I read a bunch of pop business books last year for a project. And I hated them, but also each one at least had some kind of interesting idea and some kind of way that I think you could run your life better. 19 is kind of like one before. This is a high school miss out. So this is probably like a classic. For me, maybe like 1984. I've never read that. And it's referenced all the time, and I just like, eh, I should read that shit. 20. Piece of fan fiction, over 5,000 words. On Friday, the 23rd of January, the year of our Lord, 2015, I have a piece going live at litreactor.com where I read a bunch of slash fiction. And, like, a lot of it was shit. Here's the thing. I read this interesting article on, like, Daily Dot or something. That was about, like, here's a bunch of myths about slash or fan fiction. You know, here's what you should know before you write some bullshit article for your news outlet that's like, what is slash fiction? What is fan fiction? And I read it and I was like, she makes some good points here. Like, okay, she says it's fanfic, F-A-N-F-I-C, not, you know, fan space fic or whatever, which I'm like, yeah, I don't know. A lot of the problems she had, I felt like I solved in my column by just saying right off the bat, I am an outsider. I don't know how this works. And my goal here is not to create a responsible portrait of the current landscape. It's to say, like, I picked some weird things and read them. And also she was like, oh, and it's not like it says where it's all written by, like, you know, homely women who are lonely and never have sex. And I was like, yeah, I didn't think that. I actually thought reading it that more the stereotype would be like it was written by like 14-year-olds who don't really know what sex is. And there were at least a couple that must be in that category. And even if those pieces weren't written by 14-year-olds who don't know a lot about sex, I would probably couch them that way. If I was a fan of that genre, I'd be like, well, that's obviously not written by a standard fanfic writer. This is a crazy person, basically. Anyway, it was an interesting experience, and see what's out there. Let's see, 21. I can't even see what this... Oh, okay, 21 is a challenge, and it's to create a hypothetical short story collection. So rather than saying read a short story book, it's take, you know, I would, for me, I'd say like a dozen short stories that if you could compile a collection, like if I had, this is the Peter Dirk reader, or if I was teaching a short story class and I was like, these are amazing short stories, this is what I would have people read. So maybe that will require you to read, maybe not, I don't know. But put together what you think would be an awesome short story collection for whatever reason. Number 22, mend a worn book. So this could be a beloved book that you already own. Like I have this old college dictionary that was my mom's that I stole. And I used to carry it around in college because I used it a lot. And my poetry teacher got really excited about that. She's like, oh, any good poetry student should carry around a dictionary. And I was like, totally. And, you know, I'm a big believer in the dictionary as opposed to the thesaurus. You know, throw out your thesaurus, get a good dictionary. So I have this old dictionary, and it could probably use a little mending. And that's like maybe if I had to take five books in a fire or whatever, that would probably be in there. So anyway, mend a book that's damaged. It can be one you have. It can be one that you just find at a bookstore. It doesn't even have to be a book that you particularly want, but just have the experience of mending it. It doesn't have to be professional. It doesn't have to look nice. I like duct tape. Let's see. Number 23, read an entire book out loud. This is a weird way to read a book, but like I found, I don't know, I was reading something out loud, a book I've been reading out loud a little, and it's a totally different experience. Like the way the sentences work is totally different. The way the language works is totally different. It's slower and you're a crazy person. Like you have to kind of do this when you're alone, but it totally works. And you can read it out loud to someone or whatever, but read a book out loud. 24, read a book by an author who died in 2014. Which is kind of morbid. I'm going to recommend, I think who I'm going to read is Robert Stone. I found out he died and was a little sad by that. You know, that's a loss. And then 25 actually is still blank. I'm going to put up I'm going to pretend this was a genius marketing idea as opposed to I couldn't come up with something. And I'm going to put the last one up on the website when I put up the list. So that's our reading challenge for 2015, if you would like to take it. Or, you know, feel free to take some stuff from it and go for it. So our last thing today, we had this thing last time. We had this thing, by which I mean I did. So I've been listening to this audiobook, Bad Feminist by Roxane Gay. And I'm stuck right now. She's at a part where she's talking about these various sports scandals, like college sports, you know, so like, I don't know, that Sandusky bullshit and whatever. I think this was published before the Ray Rice business. Which is kind of interesting to me, I think, from a feminist perspective, because on the one hand, he like clearly abused his wife. I think, I don't know if she was his wife then or his girlfriend, but then, I mean, she's stayed with him and now they're getting married. And it's like, I don't know what's going on. I'm not judging her decision, but it's certainly unusual, right? So anyway, I'm having trouble with this particular essay because she's kind of decrying the sports scandals and whatnot. And honestly, I feel like even when athletes are well-behaved, that sports are a horrible institution that really are ruining our country and our lifestyle more than we think. I kind of think it's bullshit that you can't go to a college and like opt out of your student fees and stuff going to sports. How come when I go to school, I can't say like, I would like my stuff to go towards academics because I'm going to college to learn. Like, I didn't go to one sports event in college. And I don't understand why sports are a necessary part of college. And this is coming from a person who, I'm really thankful that I ran track and cross country in high school, because I think it's the only way I made friends and became somewhat of a normal person. I mean, kind of, sort of. But on the other hand, I feel like I'm a realistic person, and I was like, well, I'm not going to become an athlete in life. And in college, you know, in high school is like 50% learning shit, 50% learning how to get along in the world. And then college, I think you need to shift 75-25. 75%, it's like, you need to learn some shit. And 25, learn to get along with people. And you're also like, most people are living in a dorm or living with other students or whatever. And you have to find new friends and all this shit. So I don't know. I think you're still getting all that stuff. So I guess what I'm saying is I think that I'm glad I did sports in high school. I don't think it should be like such a big part of the college experience. Or at least I think people who don't value that shouldn't have to be a participant in that. Like, I had no choice. I didn't even go to a big school. It's not like our school was amazing at sports. But you don't get to choose. So anyway, I've been real stuck for like a week because I feel like, you know, the essay right now that I'm stuck on, she's talking about sports and these scandals and the institutionalization of these horrible things. And I agree with her, but also I'm like, I would be fine with just doing away with it altogether. So I don't know if she goes far enough. We'll find out. Anyway, so I've been thinking about what could I do to be a more active sort of equal rights person? What could I do to equal it out? And the thing I came up with and talked about on the last show was I would tip any woman who in any situation where a tip was an option and it wasn't crazy. Obviously, I can't tip like a woman bus driver and just be like, here's an extra dollar for you. But I go to a Starbucks. If it's a woman, you know, normally I tip a dollar at a Starbucks. If it's a woman, I tip an extra dollar. If I go to a dinner, I tip an extra dollar. Now, technically, it would be another 20% just because if we're talking 80 cents on the dollar. But I was like, that's going to cost me a fortune. And also, I figure it'll even out in some cosmic way, because at the Starbucks, I'm going double. And at the restaurant, I'm going, you know, an extra whatever, 10% or 5 or whatever. And so I kind of asked about this plan because I'm like, it might be horrible and patronizing, or it might be a good plan. I got two different responses to the plan. And both are correct. So response number one was from listener of the show, Matt. And he was like, yeah, I think it is a little patronizing. And I don't totally disagree with him. You know, he said patronizing. And then I was like, that's the exact word I used. So what am I going to do? Be like, hey, how dare you call me patronizing after I called myself patronizing? And he's not wrong. You know, I guess, like, it gets complicated to me because I think it gets into the issue of, like, intent versus result. and my intent is not to be patronizing. And I don't actually, it's not like I'm telling you, hey, sweetheart, this extra dollar is just because you got a bajoob. To which they would probably be real confused, and I'd be like, vagina. And then they'd say, okay, well, now I'm offended. Instead of just being confused and thinking I should be offended, now I'm actually offended. And I'd be like, you're totally right. Should I give you another dollar? How do I? No, that seems worse. I don't know. Now I'm screwed. What I'm saying is, it could be offensive, and or it could be patronizing, maybe not. And I think he also made the point that is also not wrong, because he said something to the effect of, you know, social change isn't like a one-man job. I will also recommend the Alec Baldwin podcast this week. I think it was this week, maybe last week, but it was these two guys talking about, it was like New York police and Ferguson and all this shit. And one was like this former cop, and this other guy is this guy who's kind of this community activist. And it was the most reasonable discussion of these things that I've heard. And it was really awesome. I thought the cop was great because he was super honest. They talked about the chokehold specifically. And he was like, do I think they were right to... He's like, do I think they used too much force when they used a chokehold? No. He's like, it's really hard to get someone in cuffs. And sometimes you have to use a lot of force. And he's like, however, you know, and Baldwin was like getting all over him. And he's like, but here's the thing. Like, I do think it was wrong. When he's saying, I can't breathe, and it's like clearly audible, and he says it like a dozen times, that you have to switch gear. Once you have the cuffs on him, then the force stops. Like, then you have to switch gears and become a caretaker and take care of this man. So do I think it was right to use force to the point where they had him cuffed and everything? Sure. Did they go too far? Yeah, they didn't. They did not make that switch, and that's a big problem. Boy, I wish I could remember why I started talking about Baldwin's podcast in the context of whether or not I be patronized. Oh, okay. So you said social change, Matt. Said social change, you know, is more than one person, and it's a big movement and all that. And I get that. And I think that's true too. I think that how the way I'm feeling is I feel very disconnected, and also feel like, okay, I do not trust charities because I feel like they don't push their money towards anything. I feel like raising awareness is such a vague concept. And I guess the last thing I'll say about the patronizing thing is I can see how it kind of comes off as me being like, here you go, toots. Like, I'm a white guy. I got all the money. Here's some for you. But I don't have a lot of money. And I don't feel that way. But he's not wrong. At the same time, I'm like, that's the exact problem I had with it, and he's probably right. So I was like, I'm going to ask my mom. Because my mom is like I'd call her an old school feminist. And, you know, she raised me and my brother mostly on her own. I mean, she split with my dad when I was 2. And we would go to his house and stuff till I was like 14. But he was not doing, like, parenting. His house was the house you would go to. And, you know, famously, one time I was there, one of my friends was there, one of my brother's friends was there, and he's like, go to the store and get some tomatoes, and just gave us $50 and was like, go walk to the store. He was probably too drunk to drive, and was like, wanted us to go buy tomatoes, and gave us just a 50. You know, we bought all this crazy shit, walked to the store. I remember how crazy it seemed, because we got to the end of the block, and that's when I realized we did not buy any tomatoes with the $50. We were like, oh, fuck. We spent $50 and we did not buy the tomatoes. And so, like, we're kind of like looking through all of our pockets, like, all right, what happened to this money? I don't know what we did. Played some arcade games and fucking. I remember me and another guy had paddle balls, which were like a toy from the 1920s or whatever, and we're like hitting these paddle balls, and all of a sudden I felt like a complete fucking idiot for having a paddle ball. So I was like, why am I hitting a paddle ball? We didn't even bring home one tomato. And how do we have only two paddle balls to show for this $50? And then we're like, well, we couldn't afford the tomatoes. So we have to walk all the way back to the store and kind of scrounge, and they made these like organic tomatoes that were fancy, and there were three in this little package. We bought one package, brought him back, and he was kind of like, that's all the tomatoes you bought? We're like, yeah. And he's like, all right, well, give me my change. And, you know, we had like $3. So $47 bought him. It's like a $15 tomato. And they weren't amazing. I'll tell you that right now. This was not the age of the organic product. So this was the other parenting influence that my mom, you know, counterbalanced. So, you know, she was a strong lady. She got her master's degree, and she's, you know, I respect her opinion as a feminist as well. And, you know, she would make no bones about being a feminist. So I was like, I'm going to see what she thinks about it. So we're at this restaurant, and I was like, Mom, I have to ask you a question that might be like a little inflammatory. And she's like, oh my God, is this going to be like some kind of racist thing or something? Which made me laugh, because I was like, no, I mean, I think it's fine. I think it's, for once, it's me trying to do a good thing instead of trying to do a bad thing, and trying to excuse a bad thing. Or, you know, at least it's me asking if a bad thing is a bad thing or a good thing is a bad thing or whatever. I did come up with a possibly racist hypothetical. I talked to like three people about this, and they all shot me down, because basically their premise was, if you have to ask whether something is racist, it probably is. Which I was like, but that doesn't forward the discussion of what is and isn't racist, because then that just means anything that might be racist is racist. Here's my hypothetical. I just imagine, if you will, it's 10 years in the future, and they're making an Obama movie. You know, they just made this Martin Luther King movie, and now they're making an Obama movie. Let's just say, too, like, something crazy happened in the last few years. So, you know, there's, like, a big story. Or, you know, they're making, like, the W of Obama movies. Now, what they want to do is recreate, so, you know, movie technology, movie magic has moved on far enough. I'm sure they could already do this. But now it's moved on far enough where you can easily replicate someone's face. So you can get an Andy Serkis and make him look just like Burt Reynolds, right? Like, put Burt Reynolds' head on Andy Serkis, and then all Andy Serkis has to do is imitate Burt Reynolds. So what the studio does is they kind of put out this search for, like, who is the best Barack Obama? Like, who has his mannerisms down? Who has his speaking down? You know what I mean? Who sounds like him? And I'm not even saying tone of voice, because obviously they can edit that too. I'm saying, like, man, like, if, okay, when he does Obama, like, Michelle Obama would be like, yeah, he's got it down. He knows that is my husband. You know what I mean? He's got these little mannerisms that are perfect. And so they do this big search, and they find a few people, but the clear and far away winner, the best Obama, the closest to him in terms of mannerisms and style of speech and all that, is a white man. So what they do, and, you know, this is far and away the best, because this person, let's, you know, they're just a total mimic. It's Andy Serkis. Let's just say what it is. It's Andy Serkis. Yeah, he's Gollum and Barack Obama were his main roles. Best known for on IMDb being a weird ring snatching, you know, gnome or whatever he is, and the former president of the United States. So they pick this white guy, and they're like, well, we're just digitizing Obama's face over whoever this was anyway. question. Is it racist if you were going to put Obama's head on the other person anyway, that you put it over a white person's head as opposed to a black person? Now, I know I'm being purposely like taking it far, because you have to throw out this idea. You have to throw out the thing of like, well, there was a black person who was basically as good. Let's, for whatever reason, this guy's got Obama down. He just nailed it. You know, is it still blackface? And when he's on set, he's not, you know, he has nothing on his head. He looks like him on set, and he just talks in the style of Obama or whatever. And then in post-production, they digitize it to be Barack Obama. Is that racist? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it is. But on the other hand, I mean, does it matter if the movie is super complimentary to Barack Obama? Like if they're like, if this is basically hero worship, let's say, does that play differently than, you know, Oliver Stone's W, which was like not hero worship, but also not condemnation. It was pretty middle of the road versus, you know, something that's just basically like Barack Obama ruined America. Anyway, so that's not the kind of question I was asking my mom. I was asking her about my tipping scheme. Now, she saw absolutely no problem with it, which didn't help me either, because I was like, well, I don't think you can say there's no problem with this plan, no matter how you feel about it, because obviously there are some problems. Having only done this a couple weeks, I'm going to say there are definitely some problems with this beyond whether or not is it patronizing, or not beyond, but in addition to. Number one, I'm not really sure to do, okay, women are people, and sometimes people do not act in such a way that they should be tipped. I almost always tip like at a coffee shop, despite, you know, even when I feel like I shouldn't, I do. Just because I don't know, I just think it's right, and I think it's fine, and I think I can afford it. So I do. But once in a while, if I'm at a coffee shop, you know, I go to this Starbucks semi-frequently, and there's a guy who works there who has a real bad attitude, and he'll always, like, do some other task before he helps me out when I'm just standing there. You know, like, today I went in there, and he's like, I'll be with you in just a second. And he's, like, opening this bag of coffee to pour it in this thing and do this shit. And I understand, but it seems like he's always doing that. You know, and I'm like, hey, you see I'm here. Does that really need to happen before you help me out? And like he messed with this bag of coffee. He couldn't get it open. And then he just put it down and was like, what can I get for you? So he accomplished nothing other than just making me wait while he decided that he could just do that later. I just feel pretty strongly like, you know, when I'm at work, I make a big effort. If someone comes up to me to help them immediately, as opposed to saying like, I've got this other thing going on, and when I'm done with this, I'll get to you. Like, that's not how customer service is. I think you have to address the person who's standing in front of you. What's that thing? Sex with the cow that gave you? The one you brought? Whatever. Oh, God. Losing the thread. So anyway, I don't want to tip this guy in general. Like, I feel like when I go in, I'm like, I don't know. I feel like I'm not going to want to tip this guy. And I did. You know what? I even tipped him today. Just because that's, I can't help it. I feel too guilty. So here's the problem I have, though, is sometimes people don't, I'm going to say sometimes people don't deserve tips. And that makes me sound like some kind of elitist asshole who's like, work for this tip. But I'm just saying sometimes people treat customers in such a way that they should not be tipped, because basically if you tip someone who treats you poorly, then what's the point? Like, what's the point of the tip? To tip someone who does a shitty job really, I think, makes the tip less valuable for someone who does a good job. Anyway, women are people, and sometimes people do a shitty job, and so I'm a little conflicted about tipping a woman who I would not give a tip to because she did a terrible job. So that's a problem. Another obvious problem, or, you know, whatever, become obvious is like, well, when we're talking about tipping, you know, that's only going to allow me to put money into, like, the service industry, basically. And I've kind of come down on a 50-50 on that, because on the one hand, I'm like, yeah, I mean, it does kind of feed into women who are of these typical woman-type jobs, like a waitress or whatever. On the other hand, if you're putting a tip into the hands of a woman, she is free to spend that tip as she sees fit, right? And so it kind of puts it into a female-centric economy. So I'm putting more money into the hands of women who can then decide how that money is spent. So I guess the way that I'm trying to think of it right now as being less patronizing is I'm saying to myself, it's not about me giving this dollar to this woman and being like, here you go, hon, you earned it because you've got a round butt. You know, I don't know. I don't really know what the sort of misogynist things that you would... I would be so bad at that, saying horrible things, because I'd be like, well, you've got an ample bottom. Is that what ample bottom jeans? Because your bottom is ample and that's good. That's desirable to hip-hop men. Like, I wouldn't even know. But rather than giving it to this woman and saying, like, now this dollar, you can pull yourself out of poverty, I guess I feel like I'm putting it, you know, in a capitalist economy. Now that woman has the ability to choose how that dollar is spent. And maybe they spend it on something unimportant or a staple, or maybe they choose to spend it on something culturally relevant, or maybe they donate it to a cause or whatever. Like, it becomes their choice. And I think that's what I'm shooting for, is for the money to become their choice. So in conclusion, in the last week, we've kind of decided it might be patronizing, and my mom thinks it's fine, but also I don't think really thought about it. And like, I think it also can be patronizing because, you know, as Matt said, I'm kind of trying to solve a big problem on my own. And I think that makes sense to me. That speaks to me as a problem. However, I need something that I can actually do. That's like my goal. And so I'm going to continue the plan for now. And the plan isn't to just stick with the plan because it's the greatest thing I've ever come up with, but more because I don't have a better plan yet. Like, I need a refined or different plan of how I can be a little bit more, feel like I'm trying. And I do need to feel like I'm trying on a personal level, and I'm recognizing that as a personal flaw. And might come as a surprise to people who listen to this show, but I am a big pile of flaws and a microphone. So for now, I'm sticking to the plan. Tip the ladies a dollar more. But I'm also actively seeking a better way to do this, a better way to be the feminist that I want to see in the world, right? To be the one who's doing the change. So I guess we'll see. I mean, hopefully, I'm hoping that by the end of the year, I will have like a whole different plan, right? Everything will be different. And life will be amazing. But until the end of the year, I guess we're fucked. And we'll just have to figure stuff out. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. You know, I've got more good stuff. I'm going to post the reading challenge. I will probably be a few dollars poorer and have even more conflicting feelings about this plan. Weigh in. If you haven't weighed in on the plan, the tipping plan, weigh in. I want to know. And I won't necessarily just call you out and be like, this person's an idiot. I mean, I didn't do that. Well, my mom's an idiot. Everyone knows my mom's an idiot. And on that, we'll see you next time. So nice.